Good morning, everyone, and please sit comfortably. Well, we are so lucky to be able to be on retreat at this time of year. I've always found this season to be so magical. You can just really sense the changing of the seasons and the movement of time and space. You know, all the blustery winds, the last of autumn leaves falling, all that glorious color going away, already gone. Just leaving the starkness of the bare branches of the trees against the silver gray sky. All those clouds moving so quickly. The days, as we know, are growing shorter. The nights getting longer. And up here in this corner of the world, the rains have already started. And we know there is much more yet to come. We are now approaching the halfway point between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice. And it's as if we can actually feel the tilting of the earth herself as we move into this, the dark time of the year. You know, and there's an inevitability about all of this. I know some of us dread the winter. The darkness, the cold, and the wet, but there is really absolutely nothing we can do about it. It is a surrendering to something much bigger than us, with our individual likes and dislikes. It's really a surrendering to life itself, with its own rhythms and cycles, rooted firmly in this time, in this season, but also timeless and eternal. So we are invited to turn towards the darkness that surrounds us this time of year, and also to turn inward, to explore the mystery of who we are right here, right now, in this one precious moment of life. This is not for the faint of heart. In both cases, it requires courage to turn towards that which is unknown. You know, as humans, we have always been fascinated by questions about our own mortality. You know, why am I alive? Why is there death? What is death? And it's in this season of the year that we here in the West honor those questions. In the ancient Celtic world, which once comprised many parts of Western Europe, there was a holiday called Samhain. And at Samhain, it was believed that the portals of the other world opened and all sorts of strange and mysterious things could happen. The living could cross over to the world of the dead. The dead could return to the living. At sunset, people lit bonfires and left offerings of food and drink to appease any lost or wayward spirits who wandered the earth at this liminal time. The ancient Romans also had a holiday to celebrate the dead and to propitiate any malevolence from restless spirits. And this festival was called Lemurus, and it was a three-day festival celebrated in the springtime. Now, if any of us have ever studied or read the early history of the Christian church, then we already know that the earlier Christians were really very skillful at accommodating already existing holidays and just adding another meaning, a Christian meaning, to those festivities. We know that this happened with Christmas. None of us really know the date that Christ was born. We celebrated in late December because that was a traditional time of festivals and merrymaking. It was the solstice and a Roman festival called Saturnalia. It was much more ancient than our Christmas. And so too with Lemurus. Lemurus was transformed into All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day. And sometimes during the reign of Pope Gregory III in the 8th century, The dates were changed, so November 1st and November 2nd, which just happened to coincide with Samhain. All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day still exist in the calendar in the Catholic Church, and those of us who grew up Catholic, we remember this because we had to go to Mass on the day after Halloween on November 1st, because it was a holy day of obligation. But nonetheless, I think the holiday that we really celebrate is Halloween, All Hallows' Eve. And we still have that sense of the magical, the unpredictable, this liminal world that we don't understand, but that's here for us. So we dress up as ghosts and skeletons and witches, and we have parties. We dress our kids up and we go door to door. We trick or treat. We give candy away to avoid any tricks from modern mischievous spirits. And it's such a big deal that some people even decorate their homes. You know, they hang cobwebs by their front door and put fake tombstones on their lawn. And yesterday I was at Target, and there's a whole department dedicated to Halloween. So costumes and candy and even special lights, the orange and black lights that you could hang around your house. So I think we can safely say that a love for the macabre and the mysterious still exists for us today. And we ourselves on this retreat will practice a tradition that comes from Mexico and that dates back to pre-Columbian times, but is still very, very, very much alive. And it's part of Los Días de Muertos, the days of the dead. Those days are celebrated on November 1st and November 2nd. And it's a way of honoring our beloved ones and their ancestors who already died. Our retreat doesn't fall on those exact dates, which happen to be All Souls Day and All Saints Day. But I think our muertos, our dead ones, will forgive us. It's not exact dates. So in some ways, there's nothing more wonderful or more terrifying than being by ourselves alone on our cushions. Even when we're surrounded by people, surrounded by sangha, we are still essentially alone. And it's important for us to face that, for us to understand the truth of our own lives. And we will have a lot of opportunities over the next several days to do just that. In this tradition, we use our breath to connect our body and our mind. Whether sitting or walking, standing or lying, cooking, drinking tea, brushing our teeth, using the bathroom. We bring our wholehearted attention to each breath. Breath by breath, moment by moment, we practice this way. And we use words like, come back to your breath. I use those words, come back to your breath. I came back to my breath. But in reality, we are never separated from our breath. From the moment that we are born, throughout the entire length of our life, we breathe. So we don't really do anything special. What we are asked to do is to put our awareness, our attention on our breathing. Sometimes we breathe fast, sometimes we breathe slowly. It doesn't matter. We're just aware of our breath exactly as it is. Sometimes it's helpful for us to use words. I'm breathing in, I'm aware that I am breathing in. Breathing out, I'm aware that I am breathing out. Sometimes just saying in, out, helps us to stay present and aware of our breath. And there are times when the words just fall away, when our breath embodies us and we embody our breath. As Eileen said this morning, our breath breathes us. So I remember many years ago, just beginning to practice and starting to go on retreats And I have to tell you that I have always loved retreats. And you know, retreats have always seemed like they're so special, and they have that liminal quality too. You know, we step away from our everyday life, the things we know, the comforts of home, and we step into this world that we really don't know what's going to happen. And we trust that. We trust that by coming back and being here, we allow something different to unfold within us and around us, for all of us. So, 20 plus years ago, just as now, sitting in meditation, the bell master invites the bell, and this beautiful sound fills the hall. And I very diligently come back just now to my breath. And I remember even saying the little gatha, the verse that Thay teaches, you know, listen, listen. This wonderful sound brings me back to my true home, and I settle in. And then suddenly, there's like two bells, and it's like, what happened? Is this cannot be possible. Is this period of meditation over? And it wasn't that I was so present, it was because I was completely gone. Where was I for like 20 minutes? Maybe I was there 2 or 3 minutes, but the rest? I mean, my body was here, but where was my mind? Has that ever happened to any of you? Well, if so, don't despair. Please don't give yourself a hard time, but rather celebrate. Celebrate that one moment, even if it's just one moment, when you're aware that, oh my gosh, I was not present. Now, that is already really an excellent start. And then make the determination to gently, very gently, bring your full attention to your next breath. And just start all over. Because that's all we can do, is just start over. Because every moment is new. Every breath is brand new. When we first come to our cushion, there's often a lot of noise. Noise inside our heads. Snippets of conversations that we've had, list of things to do, suddenly remembering all the things we forgot to do before coming on retreat. Images from TV shows or movies, music we've listened to, political debates that have been on television, just lots of stuff that we've been exposed to. And just let that happen. Don't try to stop it, but don't attach to it. There's nothing wrong with thinking. We all think. There's a saying, our brain creates thoughts like our stomach creates gastric acid. It's just natural. So just when that happens, just let that flow right through you, let it go, and when you can remember, just come back to your breath. Breathing in, breathing out. And little by little, things begin to settle. There isn't quite as much noise. And we're more aware when there is the noise, we're more aware to come back. There's more clarity, more space between the thoughts that may arise or the emotions that we may be feeling. And still remember to just simply place our attention, our wholehearted attention, our awareness on our next breath. You know, by doing this little by little, we develop more concentration. We're able to stay more present and for a longer time. We have more solidity and more stability. And there may come a time in our practice when we acutely feel when we're not present. And we just really long to be here. And I think we all long to be here, or we wouldn't make this effort to come on retreat. And there may come a time we may want to ask ourselves, what is this? What is it that prevents me from being here? You know, on some level, we all know, we understand that this is the only moment that we're alive. You know, that the past is gone, it will never return. And the future is just a dream. I know this, I want to be fully here, but I'm not. Why is that? And then just let that question go too. And again, come back to your breath. With time, with practice, we develop enough stability that we can observe what happens in our minds. We can observe when a thought arises, and we can observe what happens with that thought. Does that thought lead to another, and then to another, until we're no longer here? At what point do we get lost? And again, the moment you notice that you're lost, just come back. No judgment, no attachment. Just again, place wholehearted attention on your next breath. Or perhaps it's an emotion that carries us away. In the same way, we can be aware when an emotion arises, how long it stays, and when it passes away. It is possible to practice in such a way that we're not carried away by that emotion. But if we are, the moment we realize we're no longer here, just come back. And be glad that you're aware that you're not present. But then let that go too, and just come back. So, have you ever had this experience? You wake up in the morning, it's like a really good day, you feel good, you feel energized, you're smiling. And then something happens, and you're not even sure exactly what happens. Suddenly, you're not in that good mood. Like 5 minutes later, like you're just feeling like yuck. Maybe you feel sad, maybe you feel depressed, maybe you feel alone, but you're not really sure. Has that ever happened to anybody? No. There are some thoughts, some emotions that are so deeply ingrained within us that we can't see them. They seem so natural, like a part of the very fiber of our being, that we're not conscious of them. They're like the air that we breathe. They're invisible. But they fill us up. And we don't have awareness of them, or at best, our awareness of them is very fleeting. And they are often the source of our deepest suffering. This is called habit energy. It's something that we have learned, something we have inherited from our parents, who have learned this and inherited this from their parents. And so on back into the limitless past. Have you ever done something or behaved in such a way that you never wanted to do that again? Maybe you even swore to yourself, so help me God, I will never do this again. And then suddenly, despite all your best intentions, you find yourself doing exactly that same thing again. That is also habit energy. Tai tells a story, and I'm sure many of us have heard this before. A man steps out of his door, and he sees his neighbor on horseback, galloping really fast down the street. And the man is clutching the horse, holding on for dear life's sake. And the first man calls out, "Neighbor, where are you going?" And the man on horseback replies, "Well, don't ask me, ask the horse." Well, that's habit energy. Habit energy carries us away, far away. We don't know why, we don't know where, but we do know that it brings a lot of suffering both for ourselves and for those around us. With time and with patience, with love and compassion for ourselves, we can practice in such a way that we can begin to understand these ancient patterns of thoughts and feelings that lead to behaviors and actions that we don't want to do. What was unseen and unheard, little by little, becomes conscious as we become aware of our thoughts and feelings on our cushions and off our cushions. We can see how one thought leads to this thought, which then leads to this thought, which then leads to this emotion, which then leads to this action. And at first, maybe all we can do is watch this. We may not be able to stop that cycle. But that's really, really a good start. That is enough to start that way, by just watching, observing what happens in my mind, what happens in my heart. And it takes commitment, a commitment to yourself to want to understand. And it takes some discipline as well to bring yourself back to your breath. Because these thoughts, these feelings, are very seductive. And they can carry us far, far away. But the moment we notice we're not here, we notice this pattern, just come back as best you can. And with practice, our awareness grows and our attachment to these thoughts and feelings begins to drop away. We begin to see that it causes suffering. And we begin to understand that the ideas we have of who we are just that. They're ideas. They are insubstantial. They only have the meaning that we give them. They don't define us. And they no longer have the power to enslave us. And when that happens, we're alive, free, in this moment, in the only moment that we could possibly be alive. We empty ourselves of our ideas, little by little. We let go of our attachments. We begin to see, to know, to understand that there really is no separation, and there never has been separation. Life simply is. We simply are. And we allow life to fill us. We are the continuation of our ancestors. They really are our flesh and blood. They are the very cells of our bodies. We are them, and yet we are not. At the same time, each one of us is special, unique, and never to be repeated. There's only one of you, and you, and you, and you, and me. We have received this precious and transitory gift of life from our ancestors. And thanks to them, we can choose how we live, what we want to cultivate in ourselves and in the world. When we are able to see through our suffering, to be aware of our habit energies, and to freely choose to let go of our attachment to them, we free ourselves, we free our ancestors, we free the world. We talk a lot about transformation, about healing in this tradition. And it's true that with practice, our relationship to our suffering changes. So it's easy to think that that is the goal, that there is something to be attained. But it's important to recognize that very thought, the idea, the notion that we need to change, the idea that we have to transform ourselves, that we are not enough right here, right now, that life is not enough, already creates more separation and more suffering for us. We don't choose the circumstances of our lives, where we were born, and to whom, the early experience that shaped and molded us. Our parents didn't choose that, nor did our grandparents and great-grandparents. And really, all that is given to us is a gift. The obstacles, the difficulties in our life allow us to grow, to deepen, to question. without suffering, it's very difficult and maybe impossible to develop compassion. When we can just be present with what is in our lives, whether we like it or not, whether we're happy or sad, we allow compassion to enter into our lives and into the life of the world. When we can begin to accept ourselves just as we are right here in this moment, when we can accept life just as it is in this moment, this is the root of wisdom. That deep level of acceptance, of surrender, of letting go of our ideas of who we are supposed to be, of what life is supposed to be, allows us to be here, allows us to be present, to be truly alive with all that is. And when we practice this way, our hearts naturally fill with gratitude, especially for our difficulties, our obstacles, our suffering, because they allow us really to touch the deepest compassion for ourselves, for others, and allows us to touch over and over again our deep commitment, our aspiration to be present with all that is, just as it is, so that we can respond to the suffering in ourselves and in the world. It is from that place of stability, of clarity, of being present, that we know how to act in such a way that we are of benefit to ourselves and to other beings. This morning, together we recited the five remembrances. And I have done that many, many times in many seasons in the faint light of early morning, and it always moves me. Acknowledging the strength and the fragility of our lives. So brief a time on this earth, our lives really are like the flash of lightning in the dark of night. And you know, it's not to be morbid, it's just to really help us appreciate that we are alive. And maybe those of us who come to practice, maybe we need to be reminded more than other people. Or maybe we just don't want to forget as much. You know, we have all known death to some degree, and we will eventually get to know it a whole lot better as time goes on. But sometimes I wonder, is death really so separate? Now, how many times have I already died in this body, in this lifetime? I'm not the same person I was 3 years ago, much less 50 years ago. Everything is constantly changing. Each breath is new. Each moment is new. There is really absolutely nothing to hold on to. And yet we come back to this breath, this body, this moment. And by doing so, we touch eternity. Because just now, this moment is truly all there is.